So today is October 18th, the 9th of Cheshvan. I knew that without checking because it's the day after my now 19-year-old son's birthday, and every 19 years it repeats, so that's the same English and Hebrew birthday. So some, not all the time, not 100% of the time. Yeah, my 19-year cycle is a day off, but for most people it works. Okay, so we are continuing on in Shmuel Bet Perek Vav, and last week we focused on Uzzah, and this week we're going to focus on David HaMelech. Just by a word of introduction, you've noticed throughout the Shmuel Bet, it seems, I've been referring a lot to Divrei Hayamim, the parallel stories in Divrei Hayamim. So my understanding, which could be totally wrong, is that the reason why we have these differences in content, and sometimes like really big differences in content between Shmuel and Divrei Hayamim, is because the goal of Shmuel, as written by Shmuel Hanavi and then later Natan, was to give over the rise of David HaMelech, and also in the face of controversy over him, both in terms of his ancestry and a little bit in his actions during his reign, to justify why he's king and to put him in a good light. Divrei Hayamim, on the other hand, which is found in the book of in Ketuvim, so it's not in Nevi'im, it's in Ketuvim, which one understanding of that is that Nevi'im was written through Nevuah, prophecy, right? So that was either going into a trance or having a dream, and then the Navi would have to interpret this message received directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as opposed to Ketuvim, which was written with Ruach HaKodesh. So there was no actual prophecy, it was just like divinely inspired works. Another explanation I heard, I think from Rabbi Chaim Angel, is that Nevi'im is meant to be expressed vocally, whereas Ketuvim is meant to be written down. And different authors have different works in different sections of Tanakh. So Shmuel, for instance, wrote Shoftim and Shmuel, which are both in Nevi'im, and he also wrote Megillat Ruth, which is in Ketuvim. So he had different levels of Nevuah with those different books. Yirmiyahu also Malachim in Malachim and Yirmiyahu in Nevi'im, and then Echa in Ketuvim. So Divrei Hayamim is attributed to Ezra and Nehemiah and the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. And their goal is very different from Shmuel Hanavi's goal. Their goal is in establishing the second temple and coming back to Eretz Yisrael from the diaspora after the destruction of the first temple. Their goal is to sort of recreate the stories of the first temple in a way to learn how to build the second temple. Okay? So when we read the story... Hi, Ruth.
Sorry.
That's okay. So when we read the story of the Ark in Shmuel, we're more focused on trying to understand David's behavior and how he fixes his behavior from the failed first attempt to move the Aron. Whereas when we read the story in Divrei Hayamim, we're more concerned on what is the proper way of handling all these holy vessels and the proper way of approaching the Beis Hamikdash, from what we can learn from the Aron. Okay, any questions on that? So as we read through the two different sections parallel, just keeping that in mind. Okay, so this is going to be two of three, maybe even four, probably not, shirim on this parak. So as I said, last week we did Uzzah. This week we're dealing with David HaMelech's response to Uzzah and acknowledging his mistake in the way he approached the Aron the first time around. And next week we're going to get to his encounter with Michal. So the way I like to set things up is I usually only put paragraph breaks in the copied text when there's actually a paragraph break, like in the actual text. So there is not here. There's no paragraph break this whole parak. But I broke it up just to remind you what we did last week and what we're doing this week, because we're going to refer back to a few of the words. Okay, so last we left the Aron. David no longer had this desire to bring the Aron to Ir David, to Yerushalayim, because Uzzah was struck dead. And it wasn't the first time the Aron had done this to the Jewish people, as we remembered in Beit Shemesh. So last we left it, it was in the home of Oved Edom, and that's where we left it. And we will learn in Divrei Hayamim that Oved Edom and his family, all the boys in his family, of course, are indeed Levi'im. Okay, so let's read this section. Vayeshev Aaron Hashem Beit Oved Edom Hagiti Shlosha Chodashim. So the Aaron was left in the home of Oved Edom for 3 months. Vayevarech Hashem et Oved Edom ve'et kol beito. And Oved Edom was, and Hashem blessed Oved Edom and his entire household. We're going to learn more about what that blessing was. Vayugad l'melech David le'mor beirach Hashem et Beit Oved Edom ve'et kol asher lo ba'avor Aaron ha'elokim. So it was told to King David, saying that Hashem blessed the houses of Oved Edom and everything that was his because of the Aron of God. Vayelech David vayal et Aron Elokim mibeit Oved Edom ir David besimcha. So David then went and he brought up the Aron of God from the house of Oved Edom to the city of David with simcha. So I bolded that, and this is one of the reasons I included the previous text. It's, if you see in Pasuk Hey, we talked about being mesachakim, sort of laughing and playing. It's actually this week's parsha, the end of this week's parsha. Well, lesachek and letzachek are very similar. So the end of this week's parsha, Avram laughs because Hashem tells him he's going to have a baby with Sarah. And Hashem tells him, then you're going to name him Yitzchak. And Rashi gives as one of his explanations because Avram laughed. But and Targum Onkelos translates that laughed as chadi, chadva, joy, as opposed to when Sarah laughs, when Targum Onkelos translates as chaychi, which is more mocking. So different types of celebration. It's not really relevant here. I don't know why I talked about it, but we have mesachakim, lesachek, which can be mockery in a sense. It's a very thin line. We actually have it in English, laughing at you, laughing with you, right? So we switched it. David completely changed it. He redeems himself, and this time it's with simcha. Okay. Vehi ki tzadu nos e'aron Hashem shisha tzadim ve'izbach shor umri. So each time that he, the bearers of the ark, so here, even though it's not going into detail like we're going to see in Divrei Hayamim, we already know that the ark is not on a wagon, that people are actually carrying it. And so they would go 6 paces, and he sacrificed an ox and fatling every 6 paces. So it was a very, even though it was simcha, it had some somberness to it with all the korbanot. Yodad, v'david mechar ker, b'kol oz lifnei Hashem, v'david chagor efod bad. So David was, they translate this as merakeh, dancing with all of his strength before Hashem. And then it tells us that he was wearing this ephod bad, which they translate here as a linen. They don't even translate it ephod. Mm-hmm. We're not sure what it is. We're going to spend some time figuring out what that is. But what does it sound like? Where do you know the word from? What's the most famous one? Right, the big de kahuna, the clothing of the kohen. So Rav Bazak suggests that it's not part of what the traditional commentaries say, but Rav Bazak suggests that David here is not acting as a king. We're going to see this alluded to in the Malvim as well, but that he's Davka acting like a Kohen, which is somebody who's like a servant of Hashem, as opposed to the king, which has more independence. Okay. So, V'tetva, V'David, V'kol Beit Yisrael, Ma'alim et Aron Hashem B'trua, U'B'kol Shofar. So David and the whole house of Israel were bringing up the Aron of Hashem with a trua, ubekol shofar. So again, if you look at what we did last week and all the different instruments, which we talked about, were like this haphazard people just bringing stuff from home, no formality whatsoever, sachakim, mesachakim. And here we're going to see very traditional instruments. So, you know, already beginning with the shofar. There was no shofar in the previous attempt. Tetzayin v'haya Aron Hashem ba ir David u'michal bat Sha'ul nishkafa be'ad ha'chalon v'tera et ha'melech David mefazez u'mecharker lifnei Hashem v'tivez lo b'liba. So the Aaron of Hashem was coming to the city of David, and Michal, the daughter of Shaul, was looking out her window, and she saw the King David sort of going crazy and dancing before Hashem, and she despised him in her heart. Hopping and dancing is what they say. She loathed him in her heart. Yitzayin ve'yaviyu et Aaron Hashem ve'yatsigu oto b'mkomo b'toch ha'ohel asher natalo David v'yal David olot lifnei Hashem u'shlamim. So they brought the Ark of the Lord, they set it in its place inside the tent that David had pitched for it, and David offered burnt offerings before the Lord and peace offerings. So olot are burnt offerings. Does anybody know the mechanics of an ola? It's complete, yeah, exactly. It's as it sounds, it's completely burnt. It's all to Hashem, as opposed to shlamim, which are shared with everybody. Shlamim are shared. The Hashem gets some, Kohanim gets some, and your family and friends also get some. So we have both of those represented here. And then Yodchet Veichal David Mehalot Ha'ola VeHashlamim. So David finished all these korbanot. Veyavarech et ha'am b'shem Hashem Tzvakot. And then he blessed the nation in the name of Lord of Hosts. And this is, again, Rav Bazak points out, not only is he wearing the ephod, but he's also blessing the nation, just like a Kohen might bless the nation, and bringing korbanot. Yotet veichalek l'kol ha'am l'chol hamon Yisrael l'me'ish ve'ad isha l'ish chalat lechem echat ve'efshar echat ve'ashpar, sorry, echat ve'ashisha echat ve'yelech kol ha'am ish l'veito. So then he handed out party favors. So he distributed to the whole nation, men and women, a loaf of bread, a portion of meat, and a barrel of wine. And all the people departed, everyone to his home. Okay, so that is the content of Shmuel. Any questions? What's happening?
I forgot what you said. Where was Beit HaMikdash?
It's somewhere near Kiryat Yearim, where the Aron was. The Aron was in...
So that's a distance from...
Yerushalayim. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so now just to remind us, which I didn't bring in last week, the Psukim in Bamidbar, where the command how to handle the Aron is. So page 8, Vayomer Hashem Moshe Lemor. So this is the command that Moshe gives to... that Hashem gives to Moshe. So we can just read in English. Take it from them and let them be used in the service of the tent of meeting. You shall give them to the Levites in accordance with each man's work. And these are, of course, the donations of the wagons. So Moshe took the wagons and the cattle and gave them to the Levites. He gave 2 wagons and 4 oxen to the sons of Gershon according to their work, and he gave 4 wagons and 8 oxen to the sons of Merari according to their work, under the direction of Itamar, the son of Aaron the priest. So if you imagine, they're allocating the whole Mishkan, not just the Aaron, but every time they would move from the Midbar, they would have to take down the entire Mishkan, and then in the next place they'd have to put it back up. So we're talking curtains and poles and bases for the poles and all sorts of things. So the other 2 groups of Levi'im had these wagons to help them bring all the different parts of the Mishkan. But to the sons of Kahat he did not give, for incumbent upon them was the work involving the holy objects which they were to carry on their shoulders. So that's the original command, and that's where it comes from, that the last week, David putting it in the wagon was not what Hashem would have wanted. So now we go to Divrei Hayamim. So here we learn that he is summoning the Levi'im. So Veikra David leTzadok uleAviatar haKohanim. So those are the Kohanim. Ula Levi'im leUriel Asiya veYoel Shmaya veEliel veAminadav. And he said to them, you are the heads of the father's house, the Levites, prepare yourselves and your brethren. Hitkadshu atem ve'achechem in the Hebrew. So make your, like, really prepare yourselves, but with a sense of kedusha. Ve'halitem et Aron Hashem Elokei Yisrael el hechinotilo, to the place that I prepared it. So here we get all this background information, not just about David and his remorse for the first time, but really fixing things for the sake of the Aaron. Kila mebrishana lo atem paratz Hashem lokeinu banu ki lo derashunu kamishpat. So from the beginning, when you were not the bearers, the Lord our God made a breach in us, right? It's called paratz uza, and we did not seek him according to the ordinance. Now look, if you just look quickly to page 9, I included from last week the pasuk from Divrei Hayamim, where when David originally prepares to bring the Aron on the wagons, he uses very similar language, ki lo derashunu bimei Sha'ul, because it wasn't sought out during the days of Sha'ul. So David says, I'm going to do this because Sha'ul failed to do this. He left the Aron there. And now David completely, instead of any critique at Sha'ul, which it seemed like he was doing before, he's now completely critiquing himself. We did not do it as Hashem wanted to. We didn't do it the right way. Okay? So they all prepare themselves, they get ready, and they do it just like Hashem commanded Moshe, and they carried it on their shoulders. And then Tet Zayin, Vayomer David Lasare Halavi'im, Lamid etachem hamishorim bekle shir nivalim vekinorot umetzilat taim mashmiim laharim bekol asimcha. So here we get even more sense of the instruments, which again are much more traditional instruments, not the haphazard group that they came before. Then the last pasuk vayimidu halivim et Heman ben Yoel. So the Levite stationed Heman, the son of Yoel. Remember that name. It's how we're going to end this part of the shir. And all these other people. And they put them up. And a little bit more from Divrei Hayamim. So this next section I included, again, just for the traditional instruments. So if you look at what I bolded, Bitra, B'kol Shofar, B'chatzot Rot. So again, all of these nivalim, kinorot, all these traditional familiar sounding instruments from Tanakh. Okay, and then here, all it tells us about Sha'ul is the same thing that we already read, that she was looking out from the window and she saw David and she despised him in her heart. Next week we're going to get to, in Sefer Shmuel, their whole conversation, which is not presented in Divrei Hayamim, because Divrei Hayamim isn't so concerned with David's personal life. Okay? So page 9, bottom page 9. Again, just the formalities that are being repeated here that were not in Shmuel. Okay, so now we're going to get into the character of Oved Edom a little bit and who he was based on some of the sources I found. So the first one, which I thought was really interesting. So you know in Kabbalat Shabbat, when we say Kiva twice, and it's so strange, right? Because there's two prakim in Kabbalat Shabbat of Tehillim where we say Kiva. One of them we say it once and one of them we say it twice. You know what I'm talking about? Kiva, Kiva, Lishvot Ha'aretz. Okay, so I found this in the Peirushei Sidur HaTzfila L'Rokeach, and I forgot to, I did print out some biographies, I forgot to print out his. Page 10. So, V'od Kiva Kiva Shnei Pa'amim. So why do we say it twice? Ba Ha'aron Mibet Avinadav LeBet Oved Edom. So the two kiva that it came represent the two comings of the Aaron, first from the house of Avinadav, who is not a Levi, to the house of Oved Edom, who was a Levi, to Tzion. Okay, now here are two more commentaries. I thought this was humorous. I hope you'll like it also. That between Ibn Ezra and Rashi, it's on Tehillim Perek Chet, both of them, which is the first mentioning of the Gitit. So Gitit, we don't exactly know what that means. We actually said it in this morning's Shir Shel Yom for Thursday, the Gitit. It's something in the instruction when there are Prakim of Tehillim that have instructions of how they're sung or to the conductor or whatever. Sometimes it mentions an instrument. And if you notice, we called Oved Edom the Giti. So it sounds very similar, okay? So Ibn Ezra says, "Lamenatzeach al hagitit, Hashem Adonenu ze hamizmor natnu lemishpachot Oved Edom hagiti shehu mipnei Levi." So Ibn Ezra is suggesting that this parak of Tehillim was actually dedicated to Oved Edom, because he's the Giti, and he's from the house of Levi, and it's like Leidutan is another type of instrument, or a piyut. Tchilato Hagiti Tzvitz Pa'eretz, and by beginning it with a Giti, we're praising it somehow. And similar to it is Rabbi Moshe Amar Ki Hu Klei Yitachis Al Mishpachat Oved Edom. So he's quoting somebody else, I don't know who it is, Rabbi Moshe, who says that this instrument was always associated with Oved Edom Hagiti. Uliyitachis Kacha Lo Matanu Lo Matanu. We haven't found it associated with him before. Okay. And then he says, Umehavalim Amru al nigun hadorchim gat. Sorry. So from those wind speakers, Hevel, right? So he's calling them idiots, basically. They will tell you that it's the tune for those who were stomping on the grapes in the wine press. Okay? Now look at Rashi. We'll just read it in English. The Gitit, a musical instrument that came from Gat, where craftsmen were found to make it. But our sages said, concerning a nation, Edom, that is destined to be trodden like a wine press, as it is written in Isaiah, wine press I trod alone. However, the contents of the psalm do not indicate it. Okay, so Rashi mentions the rabbis, who Ibn Ezra is calling these very same rabbis Havilim, and I just thought that was kind of funny. Okay. Okay, so now, if you remember, we said that the house of Oved Edom was blessed when the ark, when the Aron was in their household. So we're going to get into what the content of that blessing was now. So in Divrei HaYamim, in a much later parak, when it's actually listing the genealogy of all the different people. So it concludes the descendants of Oved Edom, and it says, Kol Ela Mibnei Oved Edom Hema, Uvneham Ve'acheham, Asher Chayal B'Koach La'avoda Shishim Ushnayim La'Oved Edom. All these are the sons of Oved Edom, they and their sons and their brethren, valiant men in strength for service, 62 to Oved Edom. So they had 62 children. Now, okay, so let's read what the Gemara has to say about that. And again, thanks to Safaria, we'll just read the English. Rabbi Eliezer, son of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, began to speak in honor of the hosts. So this is a collection of a whole bunch of rabbis who are speaking in honor of the host. It may sound familiar, Bikvod Asanya. A lot of people, when they're speaking in a different town or a different area, a different building, they'll always say that they have to speak Bikvod Asanya in honor of the hosts, and they'll say something nice about the host. You remember Rabbi Weinbach used to always say that whenever he would speak? I don't know, I remember. Okay. So this is just one of many in a line of all these different rabbis that spoke in honor of the hosts on this particular occasion. Okay. So, as it is stated, the Lord has blessed, the bottom of page 10, the Lord has blessed the house of Oved Edom because of the Ark of God. So that was our pasuk in Sefer Shmuel. Isn't this an a fortiori inference? So that's a kal vachomer in Hebrew. Sometimes we know the Hebrew better than the Latin, right? just as in reward for honoring the Ark, which neither ate nor drank, but before which Oved Edom simply swept and sprinkled water to settle the dust, he was treated this way and merited a blessing. All the more so should one who hosts a Torah scholar in his home, providing him with food and drink and availing him of his possessions without concern for his personal gain, be rewarded with such a blessing. Okay, so you understand Oved Edom housed the ark, but all he had to do was keep it clean around it. And when you house a Talmud Chacham, you actually have to feed them and give the, you know, do the laundry and all sorts of things, that so you should be honored all the more. Okay. So the Gemara asks, top of page 11, what is that blessing with which Oved Edom was blessed? Rav Yehuda Bar Zavida said, this is Chamot and her 8 daughters-in-law, each of whom bore 6 in a single womb. Reminds us of Mitzrayim, right? It's a little crazy. Okay, as it is stated, and Oved Edom had sons, Pe'ulatai the 8th, and in the continuation of the same verse it is written, for God blessed him, and this was our text in Divrei HaYamim. Apparently, these 8 children were the blessing. As it is stated, all these were the sons of Oved Edom, they and their sons and their brethren, able men in strength for the service, 62 of Oved Edom. Each of the 9 women gave birth to 6 sons, for a total of 54. If one adds the original 8, there were 62 altogether. Okay? So now this is very strange, you might say. Like, he only had the Aaron for a short for 3 months, right? So it couldn't be, you know, like, where did all these children come from and how did it happen? So that, I think we're going to save for next week. I found a really amazing, my favorite, you guys know, from the Rav Zilberstein, the Chashukei Hamid, where he goes into a whole thing based on this blessing in this pasuk. Okay, so we'll get to that next week. Okay, so so it's in, again, the genealogies listed as his wife, Ovid Edom. Okay. The next source, Masechta Ketanot, was just another variation on this theme that where it just adds another detail that this Aaron only had the two luchot in it, and he was blessed with that, and all the more so for Talmidei Chachamim that come into your house, that you should be blessed. Okay, so Bamidbar Rabba asked the question, why was he called Oved Edom? And so the answer, the reason why it was Oved, Ayidei She'avad Lifnei Hashem Kera'ui, because he served before God in a suitable, fitting way. Edom Sheha'adim Pnei David. Edom, because he shamed David, not on purpose, just in terms of his proper conduct. Hu hayamit yara mipnei ha'aron shelo yamitanu vehu oved lefanav uberchu HaKadosh Baruch Hu hagiti shehayamigat. So that's the third part. So David was afraid because of the Aaron that it wouldn't kill him, and he, Oved Edom, served before it. So he shamed David, and Hashem blessed him for it. And why is he called Hagiti? Because he was from Gat. Okay, so now the next source is interesting. It is the Mechilta, and it's based on the pasuk in Parsha B'Shalach, where Hashem tells Moshe to take the staff, the Mateh, and he refers to it as the one that you had in Egypt, that you used on the Nile River. And that's how he's going to sweeten the water, make the water drinkable. I forgot if it's that one or the next one where he makes the water come out. I don't remember. But he's going to get water from the staff. Okay, so the reason why is because there was an uproar among Bnei Israel about this staff. And the reason why is there were three things. V'zo echad mishlosha devarim she Yisrael mitra'amim aleihem. There were three things that Israel had an uproar about, that they protested. V'hayu amrim mine poranut hen. And they would say that these things are dangerous, we don't like them. V'elu hen. And these are the three things. The ketoret, the aron, and the matzah. So ketoret are the spices, right? And the aron is our aron, and the matzah is the staff. So they said the ketoret, hazo shel poranuti, the ketoret is destructive because it killed Nadav Nevihu, and then it quotes a pasuk. And so how does Hashem fix it? After the whole Korach affair, no, it can't be Korach, I think it's Korach, when there's a plague among the people, so Moshe commands Aaron to take out the ketoret, and that's how the plague is stopped and the people's lives are saved. So that takes the negative connotations away from the ketoret. And then the Aaron is our story, obviously. Here the Midrash relates that it was destructive to Uzzah, it was destructive in Beit Shemesh, and now we see Oved Edom being blessed by it, so it takes away the negative connotation. And the Mateh, when Moshe is able to get water from it, it takes away the negative connotation of only being something that brings plagues. Okay? So that's Oved Edom and who he was and how he was blessed. We have one more thing that we'll do next week to talk about that. Okay, and now we're going to move on to the ephod and what exactly it was. So we have a bunch of different opinions as to what it might have been. So Metzudat David, so everyone sees we're on the towards the bottom, page 11. Ephod bad, malbush asui kedmut ephod shel kohen gadol. So he says that this is similar to what the kohen gadol would wear. V'hayta miyuchedet la'anashim hamit bodedim be'avodat Hashem. And it was unique to those people who would isolate themselves in the work of God. V'chein b'shmuel ne'amar, v'shmuel v'chulei chagor ephod bad. You remember Shmuel also, when he was a young boy in the house of Eli, would wear this ephod bad. V'david he'll be sho be'eit ta'alat ha'aron. And David wore it at this time when they're bringing up the ark, to, I guess, get him more focused and feel more connected to Hashem. Rashi. So this is where Rashi says Mecharker equals Merakeid. And then he says Ephod Bad Mi'il Boats Porcinet. So he translates it into old French, and he says it's a linen robe. V'Yonatan Tergem Kardut V'chein Tergem Yonatan Mi'ilim De Tamar Achot Avshalom Kir De Tin. Okay, so he's quoting Targum Yonatan, which is the Aramaic translation slash interpretation of Navi. And he says it's a sleeve tunic. And when we see Tamar, the sister of Avshalom, that horrible story that we'll get to at some point, she is wearing a me'il. And Targum Yonatan translates me'il in a word that looks very similar to the word Aramaic word he's using for ephod. So Rashi, I feel like, is putting it less in a context of the Kohen Gadol, but more in a context of what was worn in the royal household as royal clothing. Okay? In the Malbim. Batel kvodo mipnei kvod Hashem begimel inyanim. So Malbim says that David canceled out his own honor for the sake of the honor of Hashem in three different matters. Aleph begufo. So the first was with his body. Shekarker v'ratz b'kol oz lifnei Aaron Hashem, because he didn't restrain himself. He used his entire body in this really crazy dancing and running with all of his strength before the Aaron. So he was completely uninhibited, which was a way for a king to cancel out his honor. Betz b'malbushav. Secondly, he canceled out his honor with his clothing. He put himself in this ephod bad, like the clothing of the Kohanim and those who worship Hashem. Lo lavush malchut. So he would, if I'm right in how I'm understanding Rashi, he would completely disagree with Rashi and say this is not royal clothing. Shelo laharot gaiva lifnei Hashem. He didn't want to show any pride before Hashem. Ubishne ela hitached David min ha'am. And with these two things, he sort of, I don't know if it's hityached, meaning he made himself unique from the nation, or he united with the nation. You guys can tell me what you think it means. I think it could go either way. Ki lefi gedulato tzarichu leharot hachna'a lifnei habore. Because according to his greatness, he actually needed to look subservient before the Creator. Kamosha katuv, as it's written, Hamelech kevan shekorea shuv eino zokef. The king, once he has bowed down, he shouldn't straighten up. And this is talking about, it's in Masechet Brachot, and it's talking about saying Brachot and when to bow down and when to get up and when the Kohen Gadol should do it and when the king should do it. And I think what he's implying by using this Gemara here is that David had to make himself subservient until the task was completed, until the Aaron was in its place, and then he could look and act like a king again. But until then, he had to put himself down. There's a better word than that, but I'm not thinking about it. V'alzeh Omer David Gimel Mashehi Shtatef Im Klal Yisrael. So the third one is that which he joined with Klal Yisrael. She'alzeh Omer V'David V'kol Beit Yisrael Malim Et Aaron Hashem B'Trua V'kol Shavar. That David, along with all the house of Israel, brought up the Aaron of God with a trua in Kol Shafar, le'orver simcha v'gil, in order to awaken the simcha. This simcha in gil is also another word for joy. Okay, so that's the ephod bad. And then one more from the Shla, who I included his biography. He's 16th century in Prague. And the Shla stands for Shnei Luchot Habrit, and it was Rabbi Ezeah, the son of Rabbi Avram Halevi Horowitz. You remember Horowitz from Stern that we taught? Gabi? Mm-hmm. So they're descendants of the Shla. Yeah.
Horowitz,
yeah. Okay. So he says, and this is in, he has this dictionary. It's very interesting. So he's on the letter Tzadik here, and he's talking about Tzniut, modesty. So he says, Gam hahit bodedut hi hachna'a gdolam et ha'adam neged Hashem yitbarach. So this hit bodedut, which we saw in one of the other mefarshim that we just read, in the Metzudot David. So those who, it sort of meditate. So meditation is a great subservience in the of man in the face before Hashem, blessed be He. So then he quotes our pasuk of David wearing a chagor ephod b'Hashem. If you skip all the little small print, Harem is ki haya meufad umikushat b'ma'alat bad. So ephod bad means it's a hint that he was girded meufad and decorated on the level of bad, which looks a lot like hit bodedut. So meaning he was like in nirvana, lahavdil. Like he was so connected with Hashem through his meditation that he was on this high level. And so it wasn't literally that he was wearing the clothing of the Kohen. He was actually in a state, this deep state of connection with Hashem with through hit bodedut. Okay. So now, back to Divrei Hayamim, after all of this happened and they brought the Aron back, then David actually established a Perek of Tehillim, which is, it's very unusual, because this Perek Tehillim is stated almost completely in Divrei Hayamim at the moment it was established. So usually we'll read something in Tehillim, and then we'll see in the commentaries on Tehillim, or sometimes David will give a reference when he might have written it or composed it or to what he's referring from Sefer Shmuel. But in this case, in Divrei Hayamim, it was then and there put into place. So in the Psukim, on that day, David ordained to give thanks to the Lord by the hand of Asaph and his brethren. And look at the Hebrew, you should recognize it if you say Psukei Dezimra every day. Chet, hodu l'Hashem, kir'u b'shmo, hodiyo b'almim alilotav, tet, shiru lo, zamru lo, sichu b'chol niflotav. It's also interesting. So this is right after Baruch Shamar. It's if you don't have enough time or you're lazy, it's one of the first things you skip. But it's interesting because it actually appears almost exactly, but a little different in Tehillim. But in our davening, the rabbis chose to quote from the Divrei Hayamim version. And it goes on and on. It's really long. And, you know, that's why it's one of the first things to skip. Maybe also because it's in Divrei Hayamim, not Tehillim. I don't know. But and then this was interesting. I got from Chabad.org this, what it said was Rashi, but I think it's really Radak, because there was no Rashi on this, on these words. So Radak says, and this is Radak on Divrei Hayamim, they sang the psalm on that day before the ark, and it, the psalm, is also written in the book of Psalms, but there's a slight difference in some words. The contents, however, are the same. There it goes on until, and do not harm my prophets. That is indeed the conclusion of the psalm, commencing, give thanks to the Lord, for sing to the Lord all the earth, is a different psalm. That psalm is also found in the book of Psalms 96, but there's a slight difference. The contents, however, are the same. So in Divrei Hayamim, it looks like it's a combination of two psalms put together, and in Tehillim, it's separate. So this was ordained at that moment to become, and it could be, I listened to another shir that tried to put forth that maybe this was the first notion of saying to, of the Levi'im saying Tehillim in front of the Ark, which would later become the Beis Hamikdash. That this was where David invented this whole notion of specific Tehillim at specific times for worshiping Hashem with the Levi'im. Okay, and then we see in the Beit Yosef, the Beit Yosef is something I have a new appreciation for through my learning. We spend a lot of time in the Beit Yosef. The Beit Yosef is Rav Yosef Cairo, and it's his commentary on the Torah. The Torah was the son of the Rosh, and the Torah wrote Arba Torim, which is his great halachic works. And the way it's, and he was the first to organize it, and the way he organized it, Rav Yosef Cairo made a very dense, huge commentary on it. And then that commentary he whittled down to become the Shulchan Aruch, which is organized in the exact same way that the Torah organized his Arba Torim. Okay? So this is Beit Yosef commenting on Psukei Dezimra, the section of Psukei Dezimra. So he says, the Seder Olam records that for 43 years, from the time that the Aron was moved to Yerushalayim until the Beis HaMikdash was built by Shlomo HaMelech, so it gives us some more dates here. It's going to be in Yerushalayim from this time until Shlomo builds it 43 years later. The first 15 verses of the song Hodu were performed to accompany the offering of the daily Tamid every morning, and the next 14 verses accompanied the afternoon tamid. Based on the Seder Olam, it became common practice to recite the Song of Praise Hodu every morning to commemorate this ancient practice. So it should give us a new appreciation for this very neglected section of Pesukei de Zimra, that this was really the first thing instituted to accompany our morning prayers and our evening prayers with the Seder Tamid that was every morning and every afternoon. Okay, so now, we're going way back again to the Plishtim sending the Aron on the cart with the cows, and this is how they sent it. So in the Hebrew, Vayisharna haparot baderech al derech Beit Shemesh. So you see it's translated, the cows went straight. But it's very strange because parot is feminine. And how should vayisharna be? Right, with a taf and a hay at the end. So it's very strange. Where is it? So Rashi says, vayisharna hare tevazo and droginus. Okay, so this word has no gender. Milameit she'af havladot hayu omrim shira, roni roni hashita. So it's teach the Rashi here uses that. He brings from the Midrashim that even the young, the masculine, recited a song, and he quotes from a different parak of Tehillim that they said. But where Rashi got that from the original Midrash is in the Gemara below. So we'll read that in English, and it gives a whole bunch of different suggestions as to what these cows were singing. Oh, so just so you know. So Vayisharna, because it's so weird, the Midrash says it must not mean, and they went straight, as it translates it. Rather, maybe it comes from the word shir, song. That's where they're getting it from. Okay? So the Gemara. Gemara further analyzes the episode involving the cows sent by the Plishtim. The verse states, and the cattle took the straight way on the way to Beit Shemesh. They went along the highway, lowing as they went. The Gemara asks, what is the meaning of the word Vayisharna? Rabbi Yochanan says, in the name of Rabbi Meir, it means that they recited a song. And Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia says that Rav says it means that they straightened their faces so that they were opposite the ark and recited a song. The Gemara asks, and what song did they recite? Rabbi Yochanan says, in the name of Rabbi Meir, they recited the song that follows the verse, then sang Moshe and the children of Israel this song unto the Lord. So that's at Shirat Hayam. So that's one suggestion. And Rabbi Yochanan himself says that it was, and on that day you shall say, Hodu Lashem Kiru B'Shmo. Give thanks unto the Lord, proclaim his name, declare his songs among the people. So our pasuk, which, and you'll see I wrote a lot of question marks. I added that to the translation because they're quoting it from Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu does have those words, Hodu Lashem Kiru B'Shmo, but it makes much more sense to take it from our story of Divrei Hayamim, that this is what they said that was actually composed by David and meant to be said in the Beis HaMikdash in front of the Aron. Okay, so that's what the cows said. So it precedes David HaMelech instituting it as part of this to say before the Aron because the cows said it before him. Okay, and now this is how we'll end. And this is really incredible. So remember all those Levi'im that we read about in Divrei Hayamim that were put up to do all the service and to carry the ark and all these things. And remember, I told you to remember the name Haman, which is not so hard to remember because it sounds like Haman, but obviously it's not Haman. Okay? So here we get, so in that source, we just said Haman ben Yoel, Haman the son of Joel. Okay? But here we see, not only was he Haman HaMishorer, he's officially the Mishorer because David has appointed him to sing these songs, but it's Haman HaMishorer ben Yoel ben Shmuel. Okay, now do you remember way back what was one of the reasons why the people wanted a king? What was one of the reasons why the people asked Shmuel to appoint a king? Because Shmuel's sons were not following in his path. And we're all probably wondering, poor Shmuel, how can he have all these kids that go off the derech? But look what happened to his grandson. He becomes, because Shmuel was a Levi, right? He's a descendant of Korach. So his grandson, Haman, becomes one of the official singers. And we see him in Tehillim, actually, he's mentioned, I think. And is in this honored position. So it just skipped a generation, and then his family was straightened out, and everything was good. Okay? So we'll continue on with this next week, and hopefully we'll get to Michal.